This is Ozarks at Large. As we approach an 11th month of a pandemic, we're all trying to stay safe. Concern about infections during the winter is high because colder temperatures make us go inside much more often. This winter, we have just one more reason, though, to spend time outside. A new book about the plants of Arkansas explains some of the untold stories behind those plants. Trees, Shrubs, and Woody Vines of Arkansas has more than 500 pages and more than 1,500 color photographs of plants you can find in Arkansas. The book is a product of the Ozark Society Foundation and published by University of Arkansas Press. The book is co-authored by botanist Jennifer Ogle, collections manager of the University of Arkansas Herbarium, ecologist Theo Witzel, chief of research for the Arkansas Natural Heritage Commission, and the curator of the ANHC Herbarium, and Johnny Gentry, former director and curator of the University of Arkansas Herbarium and emeritus professor of biology at the University of Arkansas. We recently reached Jennifer and Theo to talk about the book.
I think we wanted to include everything that was a woody plant. So we were involved in a project a few years ago called The Atlas of the Vascular Plants of Arkansas, which is a book that sort of summarizes all the species known from the state and has range maps by county for each one. So we knew all the species that were known from Arkansas. And then it was a matter of just going through that list, pulling all the woody plants out and then looking at that list further and saying, which ones of these are, you know, the least important to include if we have to cut anything, you know, maybe something that's been reported once or twice, but we're not sure if it was persisting at an old home site from cultivation to, you know, 30, 40 years ago. Or if it's really, we did include everything that's really naturalized, that's spread from cultivation, and everything that's native.
Yeah, I think a lot of us would think that, oh, this is going to be about native plants. But no, this is about plants that we may see as we walk or travel through Arkansas. So invasives and newcomers are included as well.
That's right. We made a concerted effort to include the non-natives and invasives because, well, we included everything we thought was important. Mm-hmm. And invasives are extremely important. We need to be able to track them, to know where they're escaping to and know where they're becoming invasive to. And we wanted people to learn those. And to for people who might be new to botany, we wanted them to fully understand the problems that invasive plants posed to natural communities and native plants when they escape. So we thought it was very important to include those in the book.
So, honey,
and not only do we include them, but we also updated all the range maps. So we went through and updated all the range maps from the Atlas, which was done about 10 years ago. And we got up-to-date information from both museum specimens and from iNaturalist, which is an online sort of a citizen science platform where people share photographs of plants and animals that they find, and you can go and sort of vet them. They're geo-referenced as to where they were taken. And we were able to go on there and get up-to-date data, you know, new data, and use that to update our range maps, which was, I think, a big contribution that the book will make, that it's kind of up to the minute, or at least up to the month of November, accurate data on distribution.
We know that things like honeysuckle can spread, right? I mean, that the range map might change to show more of them. Are there plants, are there shrubs, woody vines in Arkansas that lose territory, that face, I don't know if extinction is the right word in Arkansas, but are less so than they used to be?
Definitely. How many rare species do we have in Arkansas? Maybe I don't want to put you on the spot, Theo, but you might have that number in your head.
Not for just the woody plants, but, you know, there's about 600 species of plants that are on the Natural Heritage Commission's species of concern list. Mm-hmm. So these are species that are rare or declining. Some of them maybe were always rare. They occur in a really rare habitat or have a very narrow range naturally. But other species have declined as their habitat's been destroyed or as they've lost ground to non-native invasive species that have occupied their habitat niche. And we really wanted to tell the stories of those rare plants. So we made a real effort in there. And there's some great stories about some of them. For example, there's a plant in there called American barberry. It's a little shrub that we didn't even know was known from Arkansas until a few years ago. I found a specimen of it that was collected in 1888 from the Arkansas Ozarks. It was in the museum at the Smithsonian, and no one in Arkansas had ever knew it existed. And that plant today is very rare. Everywhere it occurs. It is known from a couple of sites in the Missouri Ozarks, but we had no records here. And it was actually the subject of an eradication campaign by the U.S. government in the past, because it is the alternate host for a wheat rust that's a pathogen on wheat crops. But it occurs in remote mountain bluffs and habitats like that. So it's not something that would, you know, be up against an agricultural field. But that was just an interesting story, one of many interesting stories about our rare species.
Is there one that is sort of like the ivory-billed woodpecker of woody vines and shrubs in Arkansas, one that, boy, you just love to be able to find it and prove it, it's still around?
I think that's one of them, yeah. American barberry, don't you, Theo?
Absolutely, and there's some other ones that were known only from Arkansas. Another interesting story is something called the Washita hawthorn, and the Washita hawthorn was described in 1920s from collections made near Hot Springs, and it was collected a couple more times in the 20s and up until about 1950, and then it was never seen again. It was thought to be extinct everywhere until it was rediscovered a few years ago in Lake Catherine State Park, and now we know of several sites for it, but its whole global range is centered on a narrow part of the Washitas, and there's other species of hawthorn that are still missing that were known only from Arkansas, and those we hope we discuss in the book, and we hope that people will go out and find these.
What I love about this book is that there are stories. This isn't just a guide. This has a narrative. This has characters. That was obviously a conscious decision, I'm guessing.
It was, and I appreciate you saying that. That's nice that you noticed that. I'm going to defer to Theo again on this, but he has this knowledge, this local knowledge, historical knowledge of things, as he's been studying these plants for over 20 years, that he was able just to just let pour out of his brain and onto the page that we included in the book. And there is a theme in this book. It's we want to protect the native plants. We want to find the rare plants. We want to relocate some of these things that have been missing for decades and longer. So there's a really cool story being told in this book.
Yeah, and we also didn't want it to be just a standard technical guide. We wanted it to have a popular appeal. And there's elements in the book that we really intentionally put in there to try to make that happen. It's very visual. There's over 1,500 color photographs, and these were carefully selected to show the important parts of the plants. We try to have a bark shot, a flower shot, a fruit shot, leaf shot, anything specific that's important to the identification of that particular species. If there's some special feature, we wanted to show that. We also have a whole bunch of botanical illustrations. We worked with a wonderful botanical illustrator named Linda Ellis, who did some drawings. For example, all the hickory fruit and the acorns of the oaks are all illustrated, as well as a lot of terms. Like, so there has to be some technical language in a book like this, sure, for you to understand parts and the different characters that are used to identify plants. But we really wanted to illustrate those and make it very visual, so someone without a lot of experience could pick up the book and say, oh, that's what they mean by an alternate leaf or a sterile bract or whatever the term was. So that's illustrated. And then we also try to tell stories. We have a technical description of every species, but then we also have sort of general notes on its ecology and history, maybe how people use the species or still do today. We try to bring human history into the book around the plants.
Let me ask you about one, and I don't know how to pronounce it. I've got a reader's vocabulary, but the yaupon holly?
Yeah.
Okay. It contains caffeine?
It does.
Can I, if I knew what I was looking for, could I make some sort of caffeinated beverage out of it safely?
Yes.
Have you ever made tea out of that?
I have some growing in the yard, and I have that on my to-do list. I've not done it yet. I've read up on it. It is the only North American plant native here that has caffeine, and it was a very important plant for early human inhabitants in North America, and was widely traded prior to European contact So its native range is actually the matter of some debate, because it was so important as a beverage. Native Americans made a beverage called the black drink. And this was one of the primary ingredients of black drink, was our native Yaupon holly.
I think of these living plants and vines and woody shrubs as generally being something that makes a spring or autumn or summer walk smell better. They don't all make a walk smell better, do they?
No, they don't. There are some. Are you talking about when they're in flower or fruit and they emit a fragrance? Is that what you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I'm pretty much a layperson on this. Yes.
Got you. So are you familiar with calorie pear, or what they would call Bradford pear?
Yes, Bradford pear. I know that name. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a non-native introduced species. It's become one of the most invasive trees in the state, especially, I think, in the northern part of the state. But, well, I shouldn't say that. I'm not sure if it's more invasive elsewhere, but it's pretty invasive in northwest Arkansas. And it emits the most pungent and disagreeable odor in the spring. And it, if you're familiar with it, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So, no, they don't always emit a pleasant fragrance. And there's some natives that do that too. I think pawpaw is one whose flowers are, if you get real close and take a whiff of those, you'll bethink twice about doing it again.
Well, and there's some details, because pawpaws to me are just this sort of folkloric, mythical sort of existing plant, and they taste great once you figure out how to eat them, and I just love the name. But then I found out that, you know, you got to have flies to fertilize them. Is that right?
That's true. Yeah, that's right.
And so how do you attract flies to fertilize pawpaw?
How do you do that, Theo?
Well, the flower itself is the color and the odor of rotting flesh, and that's what draws flies and carrion beetles and other insects to pollinate the pawpaw. And we have read about some accounts of people who are commercial pawpaw growers who actually would hang roadkill in their orchards to bring in additional pollinators. So kind of building on nature's way and trying to get even more pollinators to their pawpaw.
I am scratching pawpaw farmer off my to-do list, however, after reading that. Theo, you mentioned that there's a flower shot, there are all these shots, and there's also a shot of bark. And I've always thought that bark was kind of the underrated part, because it seems utilitarian and something we take for granted if we're not in this line of work. But you look at these shots and you can see that there's some magnificent patterns and some beauty involved in bark.
There is, and some of the bark is very distinctive to a specific species. Or maybe the bark and the arrangement of the branches, whether they're alternate or opposite on the tree. And you can identify a lot of these once you really get to know them in the wintertime, even when there's no leaves or flowers or fruits present. Or you can use leaves on the ground that are laying there as a clue, or an old acorn maybe that's laying in the dirt around the tree. But the bark is really an important character in a lot of species. So we wanted to show those. We don't show them for every species, mm-hmm. but the vast majority, certainly the ones where it's an important feature. We have a good.
This book comes out, as we remain in a pandemic. I guess you had to work from your homes, your offices, and share material that way. What was that like?
We did do that. Before the pandemic, we would meet in person for a few days at a time and go over photographs and descriptions of plants. But once the pandemic started, we actually used Skype and Zoom phone calls, many, many phone calls. And we would just share our screens and discuss each photograph that we wanted to choose for the book in that way. You know, the pandemic has been terrible in so many ways, but of course, we always look for the silver lining in the bad things that are happening. And if there was one silver lining for us professionally, it's that this pandemic did send us home, and it somehow gave us more time, a little bit more time to focus on getting the book done. And so it was actually a little bit helpful that we were, I don't want to give the pandemic any credit. I really
right.
don't.
Right. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, we were able to put a little more focus on the book because of it. So, one little silver lining, I guess.
Can Can either of you turn off your brain when you're walking somewhere? Or are you just seeing the species everywhere?
No, yeah, always.
Always.
Yeah. My husband curses at me because he's especially the invasive plants. I've taught him the invasives, and he knows a lot of natives too, but he just curses at me every time he goes anywhere because that's all he sees anymore is the invasive stuff that I've taught him.
Theo, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that it never gets boring when you have around you and you begin to know them. So it's something that always keeps you engaged when you're out for a walk or you know, even if you're in an urban area. You know, I think one of the neatest things about this book is that it is comprehensive. So it will include the weedy urban trees as well. So even if that's your context, you'll see that those plants will be represented as well as the rare things that occur only, you know, on a mountain bluff somewhere. It's got everything or nearly everything in the book to see.
One of the great things about trees, shrubs, and woody vines of Arkansas also is it's all ages, right? I mean, you do not have to be of a specific age to get involved and get interested in this.
That's right. You know, it is a technical book in some ways. We use botanical language in the species descriptions, but we also made sure to include all those photographs, 1,500 of them, that describe the species very well. And even very young children who may not be able to read the text will find this book of interest because of the volume of photographs that are in it. And then older children and teenagers would also find this of interest, I think.
Is there anything we haven't found yet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we find new species to Arkansas every year that we didn't know were here. And you know, the nerdy among us actually maybe have a list of likely species to go looking for that are known from border counties or border states. And we, you know, we don't include all of that in the book, but we expect that readers and amateur naturalists and botanists will get out and find new things to the state, and they do all the time. So we welcome any feedback from readers on new things that they might have come across.
Well, I'm going to include myself in the nerdy among us. I mean, I actually did perhaps the most NPR sentence ever when I mentioned the beauty of bark and the differences. So I'm going to count myself as nerdy. Tell me one that you're looking for that's from a border county that you haven't seen yet in Arkansas.
Yeah, there's one that I'm really looking for, and I expect to find in North Arkansas. There's a tree called Populus grandidentata, the big tooth aspen, and it's known from, or the big tooth poplar, and it's known. It's a northern species, but it is known from scattered sites into the Missouri Ozarks. And, you know, the story behind that is we believe it was a species that was more common in the South in cooler, more moist climatic periods in the past. So like in the Pleistocene glaciation, for perhaps, you know, all the northern part of eastern North America was under miles of ice. So all the species that are now northern were further south at that time. And we still find what we call relic species that are hanging on in certain little microhabitats or whatever. And that's one that I really keep a lookout for. So in addition to, maybe we'll have the second edition, we might have that one in there with any luck.
Yeah, that's right. I would like to find Quercus bicolor or swamp white oak in Arkansas. It's just north of us in Missouri in the White River drainage. And I would think it would be here as well, but we haven't found it yet.
That's got to be in East Arkansas. That's got to be in northeast Arkansas somewhere.
Well, and the book is available now. Where can people, I know that if they go through the Ozark Society Foundation, they can find it. Any other advice on finding the book?
Yeah, it's on the U of A Press website. They're distributing the book, so that's a good spot to go and get it.
That's right. And they're also
in stores.
They've got it on Amazon as well. I just want to thank you for having us on here and for this lively discussion about a topic we love so much.
Well,
I've got one thing to
sure.
add. We really couldn't have done the book without the help of more than 230 different photographers. So to assemble that cast of photographs that we have, you know, that was beyond what any one person had in their collection. We all contributed. The primary authors all contributed a bunch of our own photographs, but it wasn't near coming close to getting all the specific photos that we wanted. So we reached out to first our professional network and got many, many photos donated to the project. Nobody received any monetary compensation. They were just happy to share the photographs. And then we went on to, at the end of the process, we went on to iNaturalist, which is an online citizen science platform where people share photographs. And there's millions of observations on iNaturalist. And we were able to contact individual photographers, sometimes for just one specific photo that we were requesting to use. And we had incredible feedback from them, incredible participation, and we're able to get all those photos that we really wanted to have just because people wanted to support the project.
Theo Witzel and Jennifer Ogle are two of the authors of the new book, Trees, Shrubs, and Woody Vines of Arkansas, a product of the Ozark Society Foundation, published by the University of Arkansas Press. A third author is Johnny Gentry. This is Ozarks at Large.